You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about keeping healthy relationships.
How we do that?
Well, there's some benefits to it too. So we're going to talk about the benefits of a healthy relationship and how to do it.
Some kind of methodology.
It is methodology. We'll relate it to business in a way.
And engineering, maybe.
Yeah, some engineering takes on healthy relationships. Are you ready?
I am ready. Ready.
In any case, let's get going. So, the title of today's show is Keeping Healthy Relationships. How do we do that? Well, first of all, why do we do that? Did you know that satisfying relationships and connection with other people can give health benefits similar to good sleep, a really well-balanced diet, and not smoking? Did you know that?
No.
It says so right here on our little screen here. So, satisfying relationships can make people happier, have fewer health-related problems. What else?
Yes, if you're just thinking in the opposite way, when you have a toxic relationship, you can be sick.
You can be sick of the relationship.
If you have a healthy, so you can be healthy people.
We'll talk about last week's show in a minute here, but longer life. And remember, we did a show last week called, it was in relationship to the island where people don't die. Mm-hmm. People live forever. It was about a gentleman who had been diagnosed for cancer in 1976, 6 months left to live, went back to the island where he was born in Greece, and then 35 years later was still living there, but it had a lot to do with healthy lifestyle. Social, right? We talked about social interaction, friendships, and good relationships. Good food also.
What are we talking today?
Today we're talking about it in terms of personal relationships, your relationship with maybe your partner, or that new relationship you want to get into, the existing relationship you have, how to look at ways of making that better. So lack of social ties, lack of good relationships can lead to depression. Lead to later life cognitive decline. And we talked about that, how having people to discuss things with, conversations, learn new things, talk about things can help keep the mind going strong, and increases, lack of social ties can increase mortality. A study of 309,000 people determined that the not having long-term relations and good social connections could provide a 50% higher risk of mortality, similar to what smoking 15 cigarettes a day, eating poorly, and not getting exercise, physical inactivity, could do. So social interaction and relationships were as important as the healthy lifestyle choices. Let's continue on. So, what we're going to talk about is the biological and behavioral factors that are benefits from connecting to others. In fact, we talked about that a little bit. That stress can dangerously impact coronary arteries, gut function, insulin regulation, and the immune system. Really bad. So, lack of social interaction and relationships. And that when you care for someone else, it releases stress-reducing hormones.
Yeah, I guess one of the typical I recommend somebody that feel no meaning in the life is take care of something, take care of somebody, take care of some animal, take care of some plant. that take care of something you feel responsible for protect and others.
You help someone else out, you reduce your own stress, you reduce your own anxiety, you reduce your own depression. So it's kind of like we talk about gift giving. When you give someone a gift, how it makes you feel good.
Yeah.
It's that type of thing. When you help somebody, it makes you feel good. And you may not be doing it because, oh, I want to feel good, so I'll help someone else. But maybe you actually want to help other people. Yeah. And in doing so, you derive the benefit.
Yeah.
What else do we got here? So what does a healthy relationship, what does a really healthy relationship look like?
I don't know.
So that's the challenge today, that it's very difficult. Like we as a couple, you as a couple, if you're in a partnership, in a marriage, in a long-term relationship, you may look at other people, other couples, and say, you know, they look like the perfect couple. They look like the perfect couple. But what it turns out is that surprisingly super healthy relationships are diamonds in the rough. You know what I mean by diamonds in the rough?
No.
It means that long-term, successful, happy, healthy relationships are actually much more infrequent, according to a study, than we think. That only 10% of relationships are considered, they consider themselves to be the happiest, the healthiest for long-term.
Okay.
And so we'll talk about a study on that in a minute here. So how do we figure out if years later, 10, 15, 20 years later, a couple, partners, feel like they're in a healthy, loving relationship where they still care and are attracted to their partner?
Different signs, different way, you know.
So scientists decided to do, you know, the brain scan using a fMRI, which is a functional magnetic resonance imaging system, fMRI brain scan. What is it? It looks at the neuron activity, which is constantly fluctuating in our brain. The when our brains function, the state of our brain changes. And so what they do in these studies is they have a control state, a state where people are relaxed and they're really at ease. And then they give a stimulus and see what happens to the brain. And then they go back to the control state and then they do another stimulus. And they do this repeatedly to make sure the difference they're seeing between the control state, which is a peaceful, relaxed state, and the stimulus state, that it's repeatable, that it's a consistent reaction. And how they're actually measuring the brain activity, and I had to do this research because I was trying to understand how does MRI work? That your brain, when it has activity, the neurons fire. And we talked about neuroplasticity a lot of times. Your brain is growing and all that. Anyway, blood goes into your brain, and where your brain is active, the brain needs oxygen from your blood. That the hemoglobin that bonds oxygen within the blood also carries away the carbon dioxide, right? So you're breathing in and out. But the magnetic system that measures the resonance of using these electromagnetic fields around your head can determine the difference between blood with oxygen and blood without oxygen, where the oxygen is still there and where it's used. And where it's used, they're saying, ah, that's where the brain activity is. So this was very, I used the word profound to me. Is that, that's what they do. It's not like that they're actually reading your thoughts. They're not reading your thoughts. I'm sure glad they're not reading my thoughts. But
me too. Also right now.
Right now. So the point of this is I find this very helpful in understanding how the scientists are looking at this to determine are people still in that same attracted state that they were years and years and years ago? Let's go on to the next. So the study that was done, it used the fMRI, the functional magnetic resonant imagery or imaging brain scan, to determine if a brain reacted, if a and let me go back to the subjects, the group that were the subjects of this research, they were average marriage or partners for 21 years. They had been together for 21 years, and they were looking for similar brain activity of how newly acquired relationships, you know, relationships that were in those attraction stages, not the lust stage, but the attraction, they're really attracted to each other, how the brain reacts for people in the attraction stage early on in a relationship. They were looking for whose brains, 21 years later on average, reacted the same way when they were shown a picture of their partner.
Yeah, this is amazing, yeah.
And they said that only 10% of those people reacted the same way.
300,000 people.
Not of those 309,000. It's a different group of people.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a study on health. This is a study on...
I'm confused. Yeah. So many topics.
But the point being is that it was only 10% had that. How do you keep that? How do you keep that same
feeling, emotion with your partner in 20 years after marriage?
Yeah, how do you?
We have to test.
You have some thoughts and some ideas?
Yeah.
So that breaks us into our conversation piece right now about that, is that we have a lot of ideas on how to do that.
So you have some kind of plan that people can achieve this target?
We do, but first I wanted to review something. I wanted to review the stages of love, you know, the stages of love, so we can understand what stage we're actually wanting to stay in. Because there's the stage of the lust, and then attraction and attachment. And those three stages have different ways we react. You know, lust is very much, you just want to connect with the other person, and it's much more biological, driven by drives. And it's a short-lived period, typically, the lust period. Attraction is as you're building a connection with the person, and an attachment as you know have long-term commitment. So what they're looking for is to find out whose brains are still in the attraction stage. Mm-hmm. And I'll go right to the attraction stage. I don't think we have to look at the lust stage for now. Because the lust stage was the stage also that the prefrontal cortex is shut off. And so they couldn't register anything with the MRI at that point, because there's no brain activity.
Oh, maybe there's so much
too much brain activity.
Too much brain activity.
Lots of brain activity in the lust. Mm-hmm. It was exploding MRIs all over the country when they were doing the test.
When you are in this stage,
if you're in the stage of lust, do not get an MRI.
No, never.
This statement has not been investigated by the FDA or any government agency, so please do not rely upon it. But this study was looking for those in the attraction stage. The attraction stage is one where you have a slight obsession about your lover, and you really want to be together. You enjoy being together. And I think that's a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
Your heart races, and sometimes you can't sleep and don't care to eat just thinking about being with them. So, you know, that's like, you know, when you see a picture of them, you're like, oh, I want to be with them. I don't want to be traveling for business anymore.
Me
I want to be
too.
Home with
Me too.
With my partner. You have extra energy and excitement just thinking about them and being together. And it's brought on by these chemicals, the three chemicals, norepinephrine, dopamine, and serotonin. Serotonin. Mm-hmm. Almost sounds like the Terminator, serotonin. There's more to it. So dopamine helps us feel pleasure.
Okay.
And that kicked off a whole thought of how else we can make dopamine part of our relationship. Right? So it's kind of like a brain's reward system. When it does something that makes you feel good, like when your brain says, oh, I feel good, that's the dopamine being released. It's when you smell cookies.
Coffee. Bread.
Sure. You're shopping. Some people, you know, they're shopping and they're in the store and they smell the leather or they smell the perfume or something, and they're just like, they get this shopping spree. You don't?
Okay.
That's good. Maybe I do. I like cardboard boxes from Amazon. Oh,
I know.
Terrible amount of dopamine.
High level of dopamine every day.
I need my dopamine driver to deliver. I mean, my Amazon driver to deliver. So sex is part of that. But something else is exercise. Exercise can release dopamine, and we'll talk about that in a minute as well. So the norepinephrine stimulates the production of adrenaline, which makes our heart race and palms sweat. So if we can still have those feelings for our, you know, our partner at times, that's a great thing to have. And it helps increase the experience of joy in our brain, and it also reduces appetite. Kind of interesting. Let's see what else we've got going on here. I always grab the wrong mouse here. Ah, here's some side notes on dopamine. This is where I started to go into this topic of here are things that can help. So side note on dopamine, that regular exercise can remodel the reward system. What it does is it can regulate the levels of dopamine. So as you exercise, you can release dopamine, but not only release it, but also increase dopamine receptors. So it allows more dopamine to be produced and creates more receptors for dopamine. So not only are we creating the dopamine that gives us pleasure, but we're increasing the pleasure of exercise or of that activity we really like as we do more of it.
Okay.
And so you've heard of things called like the runner's high, where not that the runner is high, but the runner gets automatically, like they release dopamine as they run. And the more they run, there's this release of dopamine where it's almost like this self-fulfilling thing. The more you run, the more dopamine. The more you want to run, the more dopamine. And it can create, I'm going to say, a positive addiction.
Addiction, yeah.
A positive addiction.
Okay.
It can relieve depression. It can also increased the ability to be happy. So this is something that I remember from my father, that if he hadn't exercised for a while, it would kind of aggravate him and he'd have to go exercise. And I found that, like, as a child, that I could get on edge and I go, I gotta go exercise, I gotta do it. I just get to a point where I have to do it. And part of that was, like, I would physically feel like I want to do it, but also I'd be more edgy if I didn't. And then afterwards I'd be like, okay, that was good. Yeah, especially a good workout. The best thing that I saw about this is exercise can also, in its cycle of dopamine production and dopamine receptors, it can also repair the brain. It can help repair the brain from damage from chemical abuse and substance abuse. So moving from, if you had a challenge with substances, or you know people that have had, exercise programs can give them something positive to do and like to do, because it can give the same feeling that some of these substances can, but with a positive outcome. I think we're going to talk more about this and get into our recommendations for relationships when we come back after this break on 90 Day Soulmate with
Jim
and Lizette. We'll be right back.
Maybe wrong.
We're here at Inglenook at Francis Ford Coppola's new winery. Well, they've had it for a few years, but this is his library, books that he has read over the years that have accumulated in his knowledge and his ability to come up with amazing storylines, beautiful video edits, creativity of films unlike anyone else. Let's take a look at one of the books in his library. Here we have 90 Day Soulmate, How to Find Your Perfect Match in 90 Days by Lizette Guevara and James Gulnick, actually Jim Gulnick. Well, if it's good enough for Francis Ford Coppola, it's good enough for you. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Today we're talking about keeping healthy relationships. And I think one of the top things, we were just talking about exercise, and during the break we talked about, you know, exercise is really important.
Yeah. And also the way that we try to do the show is relating, tools for people can create healthy relationship.
So part of a healthy relationship is being healthy. That in order to have a healthy relationship, you yourself need to be healthy in order to have a relationship that's healthy with someone else. So the healthier you are in terms of your own well-being, the easier it is for you to connect with someone else.
I know the interesting point is how you know you are healthy.
How? Uh-huh. I don't know. You go to the doctor?
Okay. No, but it's not just physical health. So it's in different dimensions. So you need to figure out. It's not just that you go, you have my blood test perfect and I am healthy, so I am healthy relationship. Not necessarily.
No, that's true.
Okay.
So there are checklists for healthy relationships, but let's look at one generally speaking. Mm-hmm. Do you still want to be with the person that you're with? No. Okay, that's not a healthy relationship. Yes, of course I do. Yes. So there are these scales of 1 to 5 on some questions like this. Is there anything you'd like to change about the relationship? No, it's absolutely wonderful. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, I'd like to change everything. You know,
I like to change the husband or the wife.
Yeah.
It's work.
So questions like that, would you have done anything differently? And I had just seen, Arnold Schwarzenegger being asked, you know, you've learned a lot over your life. Would you have done anything differently to make it easier for yourself as quote, somebody growing up? And he said, his answer was, no, he wouldn't do anything differently. It was tough at times, and it was easy at times, but it was really tough. He worked hard, and part of becoming stronger is working through tough things. Mm-hmm. And so part of that is are you willing to work through the tough things with your partner?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, are you willing to do whatever it takes? And part of it is finding them attractive. I want to go back to exercise as part mm-hmm. of this. So what is exercise? Could it be, like we go on a trip, we went to, where was this? Lisbon, mm-hmm. in Portugal. And there were these hills up and down. And my calves were burning at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But we did 6 miles of walking as we did a walking tour of Lisbon. And it physically exhausted us. But
I like it.
It's wonderful. You're with your partner. Mm-hmm. You're enjoying a tour. You're physically active. You're exhausted. You have endorphins being released, dopamine being released during this walk and exercise. And you're together. So you're seeing each other in this environment. So that's very, very positive. There was something that I did want to focus on for a second with exercise, because I thought this was important for I learned it, and I hope to share it, and hope everyone finds this interesting, that exercise helps you connect with others. It releases endocannabinoids, the similar substance that cannabis is supposed to replicate artificially when you smoke it, is released in your brain when you exercise automatically by your brain. So you can release it. It is released and processed in the amygdala and prefrontal cortex, and it regulates the stress response. It reduces anxiety, makes you content, increases dopamine, promoting feelings of optimism. It can make your brain more sensitive to joy. Exercise can make you brave. It gives you strength. And it doesn't mean you're going to go out and do something stupid, but it gives you a confidence. And so it may allow you when I was a little kid, and I truly was a little kid, I was like the second smallest in all my classes all the time, but I exercised and I got good at exercise. And it at least gave me confidence when it came to certain things. And it was like when you felt strong, when you felt fast, when you felt like, oh, I can do X number of pull-ups, I can climb a rope. Something to hold on to, as it gave me purpose and it mm-hmm. gave me some strength. And so exercise can do that. It can build trust. So one of the studies, they looked at ballerinas, people in the ballet. They looked at people who did rowing. Team movement, where people had to interact together in movement. And as they're doing these moves, they're also releasing endorphins. They're also releasing chemicals that bond them together in a combined goal activity. And this created a social connection that gave positive, not only positive feelings, but positive well-being and health. And finally, exercise, and you might have seen that on our list, trying a new activity. Like we went dancing once.
Yeah.
I'm really bad at it, I'll tell you that. But I enjoy it, and Lizette's really good at it. But trying new physical activities together or on your own, as you start somebody might take karate, or they may start doing walking or hiking. But as you do it and you do more of it, that can help you transform your self-image. Someone who can't dance to someone who can dance. Someone who doesn't hike to someone who does hike. Someone who's indoor all the time to someone who's outdoor. That your self-image can change. And when your self-image changes, increasing your own well-being, you now have the ability to connect with somebody else better.
Okay, but when you recommend that, they mean you do separate activity or you have to do together activity?
Both.
Okay.
That you may agree that you like photography and I like car racing.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to take some photography classes, I'm going to do some car racing, not on the street, or whatever it is. And it's an activity that's important to each. And that you agree, hey, this is great, but then you should probably have combined activity. It's good to do together. I always think it's better to do together when you can, because it's far better to be with your significant other when you're doing an endorphin-producing activity that makes you feel close to those you're doing it with. Because I know other people who have done activities on their own, and they've bonded with people in that class, and suddenly they're now, those people are a couple. But maybe that's how it should
be. You have multiple couples.
Multiple couples.
And you have so healthy relationships.
Oh, lots of healthy relationships.
Over health.
Over. Too much health. You're too well-being. You're too healthy.
Oh, my. Two wives, three husbands.
No, that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
But the point of this whole thing is that you need to do the activities that you think, if you want to be with your partner.
Mm-hmm.
But part of this could be is that you find out that maybe we're not attracted to each other. Maybe we do have different opinions and different points, and we can't agree to disagree. And at that point, you should learn that earlier on in the relationship.
Yeah.
I think. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're going to skip that. We're going to go into... I think we'll go into this when we get back, but you want to get into it now? We'll get into it now. Sure, why not? So we want to talk about three diamonds. We're talking about relationships. Healthy relationships are like diamonds in the rough.
Okay.
Which I don't actually know that expression, what it exactly means, but it's probably like needle in the haystack. Diamond in the rough. Or diamond is, in the rough is before you polish and cut and cleave
I
a diamond.
I understand like that, yes.
Okay, that's what it means.
See, okay.
I learned something with you.
So inside the rock is a diamond, just you need to polish.
You gotta polish and cleave,
yeah,
and
exactly.
Do this and not crack
it's
it.
Not like the needle in the, yeah, in the helmet.
It's not. So to me then, diamond in the rough means you may have a rough relationship that you can cut and cleave and polish and form a beautiful relationship out,
yeah,
of, right?
Yeah.
So here are three things that we think can help keep a healthy relationship or help make a healthy relationship. And why we talk about help make is that our book, 90 Day Soulmate, is really for, quote, two things. One, if you're looking for a new relationship because you've just been in either a bad relationship, unhealthy relationship, broke up, or just this is your first relationship, but you want to have your best expectations, your best self-image. You want to understand yourself so you can understand others. This book really helps you self-analyze and set expectations, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this set of self.
Self. So talk about that a little bit. In 90 Day Soulmate, what is the self-analysis that you do?
Yeah, so one of the interesting points, and also when we have some seminar, and we have one exercise simple to say who you are and what you want. And it's amazing how much people start to write and stop and thinking, and maybe just write three words like that. I am woman, I am engineer, and stop. I don't know who I am, or worst part is what I want. Mm-hmm. So I guess there's so much people need to do this self-analysis to really who you are and what you want in the relationship.
So it's a difficult question,
yeah,
isn't it? Because I know a lot of people, including myself at times, that if I'm doing nothing, I want to put on the radio. I want to turn on the TV. I want outside stimulus rather than thinking. I don't want to think. You know, you want to shut off your own brain. You know, you read a book. You don't really go, okay, what's my master plan? What do I want to do? What do I want to achieve? Who am I? And it can be a little bit difficult at first to get started.
Yeah.
But when you give yourself time, and I think we talked about this a few shows back about learning, you do a little bit of time over days rather than try to, I'm going to do 4 hours and I'm going to do this whole book in 4 hours. Well, you're going to overwhelm your brain. Just like exercise, you can only do so much until you're burned out.
And also, if you don't know who you are or what you want, we have one message to say, you decide where the destiny put you, you know?
Ah, yeah. You basically just jump in the water and go wherever you go, rather than you get in a boat and you row to where
you
want to go.
And you have your compass. GPS, a compass, and you know that you go this way. Maybe you achieve something versus that you think, I am here, I worry what happened in the life. So I guess you deserve something that, or you have something that maybe you deserve or not.
So what I like about the self-analysis is it can really make you strengthen yourself before you start to think about a relationship. It's who am I? How did I become the person I am? What were my parents like? What were my relationships in the past like? What were my friends like? And you really analyze yourself to figure out how you were programmed to be who you are, and then determine, is this really where I want to be? And you focus on you and yourself first, self-analysis. Because once you strengthen yourself, you then have something that is something you can offer to someone else. And the more you can define yourself, the more each of you will know how you can relate together.
And also what area you got it, then this is work or not work for you. So some people try to reject something or not understand something. It's because you need to know in yourself. Typically, we project and other our own problem.
That's true. And we were going to talk about that here, which is our second step in this second diamond. The second diamond is we want people to have a situational, understand the situational moderation of behavior. So being aware of extenuating circumstances that create the way someone reacts. Okay, what do we mean by that?
Yeah, so the one of the points that we describe in the book is our observation. So our observation is like the one exercise training that your brain need to do. And it's not easy. So I start to practice this when I was young, 50, 60 years old. I remember that I was in one seminar when the people teaching about that. And he said, you need to practice almost 3 or 4 times per day in the morning, thinking, how are you sitting? How is your head, your hand, your back, your feet? Observe yourself and what is your thinking in the moment. So how much time, and this is a good question for everybody, how much time you invest every day to watch up your thought?
How you're thinking.
Yeah. You watch out what the people think, you watch out what the media thinking or say, or what the other, but you know, watch out yourself. So doing this make a very strong brain to try to have your out observation behavior.
And why that is important is we're talking about the situation moderation of behavior, meaning that there's study, and we talk about this years ago. It's probably in our book here somewhere, or one of our books, but we talk about how a study was done where they took people and they had them watch a really, really sad movie or a really, really happy movie. And they watched the movie, and then the ending of the movie is a man sitting at a table, expressionless on his face, as the camera pans in and then fades away. And they ask the people, what is the man feeling? What happens? If the person watched the really sad, depressing movie that led up to this scene, they'd, oh, he's so sad, he's so upset because his family left, and they have all these feelings they put on him, and he has no expression on his face. And if they watch the happy movie, they're like, he's so happy that his family came back, he was able to achieve what he planned, they're thinking that he's happy, and he has the same expression. Why this self-observation is good is that if you understand your own mood and how you're approaching a situation, don't put your emotions on the other person. Do you know how many people, and we always talk about that, right? You see in others how you are feeling.
Yeah. And then you're also, I always say, be careful where you don't lie, because it's something that you don't lie yourself. You know, like the others, you like yourself.
So the other piece of the situation moderation of behavior is, say your partner comes home from work and they had a terrible day at work. And they're just like, they were yelled at by their boss. They didn't get along with a coworker. Someone stole their idea and used it and got credit for it. Now they come home and you were going to talk to them about cleaning up after themselves in the morning when they leave for work. And it's just one more straw. And if you don't understand that everything that happened prior to your partner coming home and how stressed they may be, you don't understand when you say something about, hey, could you pick up your coffee cup before you leave for work? And then they just start yelling at you. What happened? So sometimes, and sometimes it's really important to say, hey, hon, hey, lover. Hey, Lizette.
Hey, take out your coffee.
What No. What I'm saying is, how was your day? Yeah. Oh, it's terrible. Oh, that's awful. What happened?
And then I go and just, running outside and leave alone. Yeah.
Let everyone settle down. But it's to understand the situation that's going to lead up to the conversation. The situational moderation of behavior. The behavior that someone exhibits is based upon the situation that may have occurred ahead of time. How they view you is maybe not how you're feeling, but how they're feeling. Just how we said, how you view them is how you're feeling and not their feeling. Is that we more strongly think somebody is being a certain way because of how we feel than because of how they are.
Yeah, but also the overreaction when the context is nothing matter is the third topic that you have.
Yes.
If you are emotionally intelligent, you need to understand to put the emotion in the moment, in the site, in the location,
right,
and the people right, versus the translate your emotion to different contexts.
Right. So emotional intelligence, generally speaking, is recognizing the emotion of the situation, recognizing everybody's emotion in the situation, regulating your own emotion to change the situation to give the best outcome for the group, whatever the objective is, whatever the goal is. If it's with your partner, saying, okay, I understand what's going on here. I am not going to be overly emotional based upon how I feel, but I want to go, what is the goal here? We need to figure this out together. Yelling at each other is not going to do it. Being upset's not going to do it. But you know what's going to do it now? Hey, you know what? I need a little time to just collect my thoughts. I'm going to go exercise for a little bit. Do you want to go with me? Do you want to do it on your own? Whatever.
No hablo inglés, señor.
Could you restate that? I don't know. I don't know what Lizette's saying, but we're going to say more when we come back on 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Right after this break. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Today we're talking about keeping healthy relationships. We gave a couple of diamonds, thoughts of what to do.
You know, what did you have?
We have three bonuses. Bonuses if you act now, before midnight tonight.
Call 911.
No. No, do not do that. 555 9111. There you go. Always dial 555
8080.
So, the three bonuses are, we talked about exercise and how important that is. And no matter what it is, if it's just walking, just having your body burn some energy, getting some blood flowing, the blood flowing in the brain and the body is so good for you, right? We want to talk about exercise again in a minute. Major objectives.
Mm-hmm.
So as a couple with a partner, you have decide on some major things you want to do. Like Lizette and I, we have major things we want to do, like we want to travel.
Yeah.
So we try to set like, okay, we have a travel date 3 months from now and 6 months from now. We're starting to plan those as major milestones, major objectives, or We want to move, and we want to move, you know, in 3 years, and this is where we want to move. That we're not saying we want to. I'm saying this is an example of.
Oh, really?
We're going to be on that trip to Mars. We're going to
We can be in anywhere.
Anywhere.
Everything is remotely.
We're going to become remote.
Yeah.
Where?
In the
remote.
Other planet. Yeah.
We're going to be from our spaceship.
Mm-hmm.
But having major objectives together and major plans together make all these little things that occur along the way less impactful, and it changes how you think about them because you're looking for the outcome that keeps you moving towards that major objective. If you have no major objective, then you have no future, and without a future, the present becomes everything. And when the present becomes everything, then anything that happens, it becomes the major problem. So having a future together gives you something to navigate towards, and then when the water gets a little rough, you try to find the smooth way to sail through it or how to deal with it, bail out the ship, keep going, rather than you have nowhere to go, so you're just going to turn the boat around, go back to shore and say, bye, honey.
Yeah. No, so again, right? When you know what you want versus that you don't know.
Right. You know what mm-hmm. you want, you know where you're going, and you want to get there together.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about that. And then the maintenance plan.
Mm-hmm.
This is our business-related category here. Is that just like a company needs a maintenance plan to take care of equipment, a relationship, a couple, people who have time together, want to spend time together, should have a maintenance plan. So typically that consists of emergency, preventative and predictive, and priority.
Mm-hmm.
And Lizette's going to talk all about that now.
I really.
We'll talk together.
Yeah. So the concept for maintenance, because, you know, sometimes I'm thinking about my job and try to translate my outer process in the relationship.
Yeah.
Is you have to take care mm. your relationship. So using the process for maintenance equipment when you need to plan in, your prevent maintenance. So it's, I mean, you have to have plan weekly, monthly, annually to change some part, cleaning, filter. Okay. So if you translate for relationship, is what do you do every month? What do you do every quarterly or monthly or yearly? And establish some kind of the priority is the difficult way. So most of my finding and out is when the maintenance department just doing what I want to do, the people yell more high and take care of that versus the real understand this equipment is priority. This is a level 1 or 0 for emergency and take care.
So can part of our maintenance plan be every Friday or every second Friday, we're going to go out together.
Mm-hmm.
Once a month, we're going to do a garage cleaning.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
These become the things we need to do, but sometimes things are going to collide with each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I have a job function that I need to go to, but it's the same night that we decided we were going to go out, and it's the same night we're supposed to clean the garage. What is the priority?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to determine what are priorities of these items that you need to take care of. And to have open discussions before you get to that conflict.
Yeah.
Because you want to have an idea of how you're going to handle the conflict. Preventative and predictive.
Mm-hmm.
Predict we're going to have a problem. And how are we going to take care of it when we do? When your schedule conflicts with my schedule and they both conflict with our vacation schedule, what are we going to do? Go on vacation.
Go vacation, forget about it.
Forget about it.
Yeah.
But that's mm-hmm. one. And the other is, so that's the priority when you have conflict. But what, tell me again, preventative versus predictive.
Okay, so in relationship, you can be preventive when you establish some routine stuff. But a predictive is when you understand that some issue happen regular. For example, you like to buy a car.
Okay.
Every 3 or 6 months.
Okay.
So that is an issue that impact the economy and our relationship, and we have to figure out. So predict is start to to create more checking out to, okay, when you have this feeling internally to change the car, what is the option that you have? So we working previous, this happened because I know that every 3 months you have this feeling to change your car.
Okay.
So that is predictive. When there's an issue, you can catch before it happens.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I got it. So like every once in a while, you want to maybe go with your friends somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you should never go with your friends because we're a couple now. We should only go together. But you, for the last 30 years, have been doing a vacation with your girlfriends.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that what? They're going off by themselves, these women? That doesn't feel right. And so I can look at that and go, okay, I understand you've been doing this. One, is there the trust there? Oh, you need to trust. Yeah, you have to trust in a relationship.
Yeah.
And also understand this is how it's going and it's been going this way. And you either accept or not. But this is an early on thing. It's not like, you know, you're going out together and then you start dating and then you get into a really deep relationship and suddenly Lizette goes, oh, I want to go with my friends somewhere. What do you mean? And she's never told me this before. Rather than part of our conversations and dating.
Or picture that every 4 years, for 35 years, we do the same routine. So this is a maintenance for friendship. And I keep in my PM on time.
So me understanding, when I understand that this is Lizette's schedule,
mm-hmm.
I go, okay. It's not like suddenly she's going off with her girlfriends because she wants to talk about me behind my back. Oh, she does that all the time.
I do all the time, from her back or the side.
She just starts speaking in Spanish. She doesn't know I understand it yet, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But what's emergency? Let's go back to the emergency maintenance plan.
Okay. Emergency is when something is broken, you know, working more.
Uh-huh.
So in relationship, when something is broken, we have disagreement for one topic, you need to take care.
Okay, so it's being able to bring up an emergency, and maybe it's like, hey, I need to bring up, and if you phrase conversation with your partner this way, hey, I have to bring up an emergency maintenance item. Oh, okay. And make it, rather than an emotional thing, a logical thing. Is that this is what's happening, this is how it's affecting me, and I'm looking at this long-term goal, so I know this is small, but we need to address it. It's an emergency because we need to address it now before it gets big.
Because typical for emotional thing, most, I don't know the study or statistic, but most human being avoid. Mm. Oh, I don't want a drama. I don't want to talking about that. So you avoid your emergency. What happened with the emergency? Become worse.
It becomes worse. So last week we brought up the anxiety. Remember anxiety? Mm-hmm. We talked about anxiety, and we'll talk about the avoidance versus the approach.
Mm-hmm.
That when you have a situation which you consider an emergency situation and you avoid it, it grows, right? The chasm gets bigger. It may be scary to approach the situation and look at it and talk about it, but then it can disappear. And I know my analogy last week was there's a shadowy figure in one of your bedrooms or in a room in your house, or you hear a noise in your living room and you say, I can do one of two things. I can just avoid it and now be scared for the next every night because I don't want to go in there. I don't want to go, you know, is it a snake? Is it a raccoon? Is it a cat?
Not a rat.
Is it, what is it? You know, what is it? If you don't know, it keeps that anxiety going. But when you do know, it may be scary to face. It may take a little bit of bravery.
Mm-hmm.
But when you face it, it may crumble. And there's the, of course, definition of fear that everybody spews out, false evidence appearing real, right? Fear. It's not really the definition of fear. It's what people say. It's motivational speakers talk about it that way. That when you face something that you fear or that you're anxious about, it can actually just crumble. It could be nothing. It could be really, really small. But the anxiety is actually the worst part of it. It's not the stimulus or the item that's actually the problem. It's just how you're feeling about it. That's the problem. And when you just say, I'm addressing it, you just go ahead and take care of it. Again, brave people act despite how they feel about it. They might be just as scared about something as you, but they do something about it. And that's what makes someone brave. Sometimes we say maybe they're stupid, but brave people tend to face challenges, and it reduces anxiety over the long term.
Yeah.
So face your challenges head on, approach them. We talked about
maintenance plan,
and we talked about self-analysis, observing yourself and others' behavior, looking at the situational moderation of behavior, your own and your partner's, and coming up with long-term goals that make these little bumps along the way something to get through to keep going and going and going as long as you like in your relationship. Thank you for listening to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim. I see you the next week.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lizette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.